All right, we're back on Big Board Sports. College football back bigger and better than ever this season, and some great matchups coming up this weekend. Max Chadwick joins us from College Football Pro Football Focus. And Max, we appreciate a few minutes on ESPN Radio in Albany with the college football season rolling right along. How you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Man. Thanks, we're good. Can I start with Penn State from last week? Because I know it was a huge game. What is it about the Nittany Lions and James Franklin just can't seem to get over the hump against ranked opponents, especially at Beaver Stadium on a whiteout day?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, they're obviously very, very close to the double overtime game. You look at the passing game for Penn State. It's been the Achilles heel for this team in years past, too. And, what they've done this year is they've really needed help with at wide receiver and at quarterback. And Drew Aller was not able to get it done, and the receivers especially were not able to get it done against Oregon. And that's a really good Oregon team, obviously. But, it seems to be the same issues for Penn State over and over again.
Can Penn State still rebound from that? I mean, it's still a long way to go. They got some big games coming up, not necessarily this week at UCLA, but they go to Ohio State. There's some games that if they win, they could still find themselves in the playoff picture.
Yeah, I think they can. They could. They obviously got to beat Indiana, but even if they lose to Ohio State and go 10-2 on the year, if they beat Indiana, I think they're still in the playoffs. So yeah, they definitely can rebound and make the playoffs still. And this is still probably a top 10 team in the country. They just got to prove it the rest of the year.
Yeah. What games are you looking at this weekend, Max? Headlines.
I'm looking at Miami, Florida State. I think that's the biggest game of the weekend, in my opinion. It's probably the biggest game of the ACC schedule all year. So I'm really excited for that game. Vanderbilt, Alabama is a huge game too. Obviously, Vanderbilt looking for to beat Alabama once again. Bama looking for revenge on last year. So I'm excited for that one too, and a bunch of other really interesting ones too. Like Texas A&M, Mississippi State is a really fun game too. I think Texas, Florida is really interesting too. So it's not as loaded as last week, but it's still a really good week this week.
How good is Texas A&M? I mean, I think you got to get that team intrigues me here moving forward.
Yeah, I think Texas A&M is pretty good. I think they have some really good pieces offensively, quarterback and wide receiver, and I think their defense is pretty solid too. So, yeah, I think A&M is certainly a contender for sure.
And Vanderbilt can win again against Bama or not?
Yeah, they can. I wouldn't pick them to do it, but I think they absolutely can. I think Diego Pavi is playing great football right now, and I think Vanderbilt, there's a chance they can pull it off this week.
Talking some college football with Max Chadwick from Pro Football Focus here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio and the free 104.5 the Team app. And, you know, Max, so far early on in the season, who has been, in your eyes, the biggest disappointment from a team that was ranked, let's say, in the top 25 here about 5 or so weeks in?
It has to be Clemson. Yeah. I had Clemson winning the national title preseason, and they obviously have not looked great so far, so... Yeah, I think Clemson. I know multiple people that had Clemson win the national title too. So I think Clemson so far has been easily the most disappointing team in college football.
And what are they, a 2-point or 2-touchdown favorite on the road at North Carolina?
Yeah, I mean that says more about North Carolina. I think the Bill Belichick era at North Carolina is not really going to plan right now. They're kind of a disaster in a lot of areas, which is honestly not too surprising for me. But yeah, I think I just think Clemson though too. Like they're just not playing great football right now, and they need to figure it out quickly.
And then, Max, you had our Syracuse team a couple of hours away from the Albany area with a lot of alum here. I mean, they go on the road and beat Clemson, and, I mean, Clemson's just not playing very well this year. But then they went home last week and got absolutely whacked by Duke. Did that final score surprise you?
A little bit, yeah. I think, you know, the Ricky Collins, now that he's at quarterback over Steve Angeli, who's out for the year with the torn Achilles, obviously – I wasn't too surprised by it. I do think it's a big downgrade from Steve Angeli to Ricky Collins. So I didn't expect them to win the game, but yeah, losing by 35 points like that was certainly not expected for Syracuse.
Illinois at Purdue. How about Illinois able to bounce back the way they did after getting whacked by Indiana?
Yeah, it was huge. They did a great job of bouncing back, like you said, and you know, Luke Allmyer had a great game against USC. In that one, too, after having a rough one against Indiana. So, yeah, it was great to see them do that. And they should have a pretty easy game, I think, in this week against Purdue. I know Purdue's kind of rebuilding that program right now. They've done a decent job with that. under Barry Odom, but this is still a program that Illinois should have no problem taking care of.
Did that surprise you the way Illinois bounced back? Because I saw the second half of the game against Indiana, and I couldn't believe the score when I turned on the NBC affiliate here in the 518.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I thought it would be a close game, but I thought USC would win ultimately, and it was a great showing from Illinois after, you know, a really embarrassing loss the week before to come back against a top 25 team and beat them like that. So, yeah, it was a great showing from Brett Bielema and his players, and it shows in college football, man, it's a week-to-week business, really, and Illinois did a great job of getting their playoff hopes back on track.
What's your take on Ohio State? Do they have what it takes to repeat?
Yeah, I think so. I think right now they're the favorite by most sports books right now, and I probably agree with that. They look like the best team in the country right now. Their defense is playing outstanding. I mean, they've only let up 5.5 points per game, which is the best in the country. Only 13 combined points to Texas and Washington, too. So, yeah, that defense looks incredible. Julian Sand, it looks like the most accurate quarterback in America right now. Jeremiah Smith, obviously, a superstar, too. Yeah, that Ohio State team, I don't think it's as good as last year's team, but right now they look like maybe the best team in the country.
Max, is there a world or a scenario how Notre Dame can somehow get into the college football playoff, or are those losses against, you know, superior competition and both Miami and Texas A&M gonna hurt them, especially not being in a conference?
I wouldn't guarantee it, but I would say if they win out, they would still make it in the playoff, and they should win out. You know, looking at their schedule, they do play USC later on in the year, so that'd be an interesting game, but... yeah, as long as they go 10-2, they have a shot and probably will make it in. 9-3 with that schedule, though, and those two losses, I do not see Notre Dame making it in the playoff.
Max Chadwick, keep up the great work with College Football, Pro Football Focus, and always a pleasure to have you on ESPN Radio in Albany.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Max.
Take care. Let's bring on Pete Doherty from the Times Union. We roll through what is now week 5 of the NFL season. Good morning, Pete. How are you?
Good morning, Roger. I'm fine. The key question here is, are we going to be able to see the game? I guess we're a Saints marker. We got the Saints last week. Are we getting the Saints this week on local TV?
I don't know. Ask the suits who make those decisions in this market.
Yeah, you know, I think it was the Monday show I heard where you guys are talking about that. I'm pretty sure that's a network decision where the local stations, though, can petition and say, hey, we want this game, not the game you assigned us. My experience at WRGV, and this goes back a ways, and they've gone through a couple of station managers, so it may be different now, but my experience was they didn't usually argue with the network on what game they showed. So I'm still stunned. I was out of town last weekend, so I didn't realize until afterwards that game wasn't available. That's just not right, especially when the Bills are playing the Saints at 0-14 now. I don't understand that.
No, there is no explanation for it whatsoever. Whoever made the decision or allowed it to continue, and didn't try to block that locally here, that they made a mistake on that one. But we'll move on. Hopefully, no more conflicts. But I'm sure there will be along the way. All right, Pete. Interesting game to kick things off tonight. San Francisco +5.5 of the Rams. This could go either way. I'm going with the Rams to win this game tonight at home.
And most of your panel did too. San Francisco's just missing too many bodies, including Brock Purdy. I mean, Caffrey's the only weapon the Niners are going to have on offense. And obviously, the Rams will focus the defense on him. 5.5, I don't think, is a lot of points to give up here. I like the Rams. And, of course, we'll all be watching the baseball game anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. 8 o'clock. We're not going to be watching the Rams. You're right. We're going to watch the Red Sox and the Yankees. All right. On to Sunday, my friend. And here we go. All these picks will, by the way, well, today's picks are all in the Times Union right now, newspaper. Go buy your newspaper, right? And the rest of the picks will all be in the Sunday edition. All right, Minnesota. I'll go two at a time here, Pete. I got Minnesota -3.5 against Cleveland. That game's in London. I like the Vikings here. And then Dallas -2.5 at the Jets. I certainly can't pick the Jets. Dallas -2.5. The Cowboys are going to win that game on Sunday at 1:00.
Yeah, I agree with both. I'm surprised the line's only 3.5 in Minnesota. The Browns obviously are changing quarterbacks. Maybe they're trying to catch some of that Jackson Dart magic, but I'm not sure that Dillon's going to be the answer for the Browns. I like the Vikings, and yeah, I think I like the Cowboys. The Jets are, you know, getting a lot of moral victories as they don't show up in the standings. The standings say they're 0-4. I think they're 0-5 when this game's over.
All right, Miami minus 1.5 at Carolina. I'm going Carolina here. I'm still not impressed with Miami. And Vegas plus 6.5 at Indianapolis. The Colts, surprisingly, and they could have won last week, didn't. But I like the Colts at home in this game.
Yeah, I agree with both of those, actually. I like Carolina. Miami's about 1.5 favorite, but I like Carolina at home. I just think the Dolphins off a short week and losing Tyreek Hill certainly hurts them as well. So I certainly agree with that. And I forgot the other game already.
Vegas plus 6.5 at Indy.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm finally back. I'm finally on the Indy bandwagon. I'll take the Colts minus 6.5. In fact, the Colts are my survivor pool pick this week. So I hope they continue to do what they've been doing through 4 weeks.
Yeah, Daniel Jones having a really good year. All right, Denver, I'm already here. Those who don't like Philadelphia, and there's plenty of those. This is the week. Denver's going to go into Philadelphia and win. No, they're not. Denver plus 4.5 at Philadelphia with A.J. Brown would just shut up and play and not worry about how many times he's going to be targeted. But I like Philadelphia to keep it rolling. And then Houston plus 3.5 at Baltimore. I mean, the Ravens have to win this game, and I think they will at home.
Okay, I think Philadelphia will win that game. I certainly wouldn't be surprised to see an upset, but Denver's traveling across the country. I don't feel strongly enough to think that they're going to upset the Eagles. So I see the Eagles going 5-0. That Baltimore line has changed. The Texans are actually favored in that game now by 1.5. I agree. I like Baltimore at home, even though Lamar Jackson's probably not going to play. I think they have enough of a running game and enough weapons to outscore the Texans, who finally got their first victory last week, but I don't see them getting their second. I like Baltimore at home.
All right. On to the rest of it. In week 5, I'm joined by Pete Doherty, who heads up the Times Union NFL picks, 20-plus years of doing it, and I've been right there with him every step of the way. Tampa Bay plus 3 at Seattle. I've got the Bucs bouncing back after last week's loss. And then Tennessee plus 9.5 at Arizona. Tennessee's a bad football team. I like Arizona at home to win.
I like Seattle at home. Be interesting to see if that game gets changed to I heard there's a chance it could get changed to Monday night, or just because of the baseball, because the Mariners are home that day, and those stadiums are like a block apart, so you really can't play both of those games at home on the same day. So I'll be interested to see what they do. No matter when they play it, I like Seattle at home. Mm. I just think the Bucs are a little bit beat up, but they're probably not going to have Bucky Irving for that game. I think the Seahawks get it done. And the Cardinals are banged up. They just lost another running back, Trey Benson. They shouldn't have problems with the winless Titans, but that 8.5 is a lot of points. I think I would take the points, but I'll pick Arizona to win the game.
All right, on to the next two. Detroit is minus 8.5 at Cincinnati. Got to be Lions here. Just a long year for the Bengals here without Joe Burrow, for sure. And then Washington plus 3 at the L.A. Chargers. I got Washington winning that game on the road.
Well, that's interesting. I got Detroit Lions at the 10.5, and I still will take the Lions. And I think I'd give the points, too. I even though it's a road game, I think the Lions roll there. Another game is interesting. Washington has played pretty well. They've got some injury issues. McLaurin's probably not going to play. So I think I like the Chargers at home in that one.
All right. And then the final two, the one to wrap things up. And again, I'm hearing whispers, hey, maybe this could be an upset. New England at Buffalo. Patriots plus 8.5. Playing pretty well, coming off a good win. I like Buffalo to win this game, but I do think that the Patriots have a chance to keep this close. So, maybe a close game, but a win by the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I certainly like the Bills to win the game. I think I'm going to give the 8.5 here. It's a hard one to judge. The Patriots are playing better, but they're also turnover prone. The Bills are known for takeaways. I think maybe a couple of turnovers could make this kind of a one-sided game, but I think it'll be a good one for at least a half, and then maybe until the end, you don't know, but I'll give the 8.5.
All right, and finally, and it's another one that It wouldn't shock me, but I'm picking Kansas City, -3 at Jacksonville. But the Jaguars are a good football team this year. They really, truly are. They're going to win their fair share of games. I'll say Kansas City will keep it rolling and coming off their best performance last week. But I wouldn't be shocked if Jacksonville wins this game. But put my money on the Chiefs.
This wound up being a pretty good Monday night game for ESPN. The Jacksonville's having a better year than when Kansas City got the big win over Baltimore. Suddenly the Chiefs are contenders again. I like Kansas City as well. I think they're finally getting it together. Getting Worthy back last week was a big deal.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Playmaker, yeah. Makes things happen. No, he's a difference maker. And I think Kansas City can get on a roll here, but I don't know. I do like Jacksonville. I think they're going to have a really good season.
Well, they seem to be, but they've had a pretty soft schedule, I think, so far. Chiefs defense is pretty good, so this will be a big test for Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars offense. But I like the Chiefs -3.
All right, Pete, we'll see how it all plays out. As you know, I had a very tough week, so I hope to rebound.
I had a tough week, too, so misery loves company. But it's a long season. We're only 3-4, so what is that, 14 weeks to go in the playoffs. So let's not count ourselves out yet.
Long way to go. We'll rally. All right, Pete Doherty, always a pleasure. Have a great Thursday. We'll talk to you this time next week.
Okay, Roger. Look forward to it.
You got it. And we are back on Big Board Sports, hour number 2. Everybody buzzing about Game 3, the winner-take-all Game 3. New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox tonight at Yankee Stadium. We're joined by Tim Healy from the Boston Globe. I'm still getting used to rolling that off of my tongue. Veteran baseball writer, long time with the New York Mets, and now with the Boston Red Sox. Tim, good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you guys?
We're good, man. Great, Tim. We're good. Yeah. I don't have to talk to you about the total collapse of the New York Mets this morning.
It is fascinating, though, huh?
Oh, from afar, you must be shaking your head on that one. Man, oh, man.
Yes.
But, Tim, what will it take tonight for Boston to get this done? And what do we know about was it Connelly Early, a 23-year-old rookie?
Connelly Early, left-hander, and in 4 starts in September was actually quite impressive. And he did not face Yankees-caliber teams in those starts. It was the Athletics a couple of times, the Rays, the Tigers. So some decent teams, decent offenses, but the Yankees and Yankee Stadium in a winner-take-all playoff game, no less, will certainly be a different kind of test for Connelly Early. He's got very impressive demeanor, very impressive pitch mix. Sometimes a prospect comes up from the minors and he has, you know, 2 pitches and a third okay one, and the pitching coaches say about him, well, one day he'll be able to add a 4th and then he'll be really good. This guy has 5 pitches, and he can throw all of them at any time, and he throws decently hard for a lefty, so it's certainly not how the Red Sox drew it up, Connelly Early in Game 3 as their Game 3 playoff starter, which is just honestly mind-boggling. But here they are.
Yeah, here they are. I mean, do you give them a punchers? I mean, look, I think most people you would poll here, those who follow the game closely, give the edge to the Yankees at home. And, you know, they've been playing pretty good baseball, but it is that rivalry matchup. Do you give the Red Sox a puncher's chance tonight?
I give him a puncher's chance, yes, because in one game, anything can happen. I will say that going into Game 2, I liked the Red Sox chances better in Game 2 than in Game 3. I'm a big Schlittler guy, to be honest. I think he's been really good in the, 3 or 4 months since he's come up. Touches 100 with his fastball. I love the story that he's from outside of Boston, grew up a Red Sox fan. I eat that up. I'm a sucker for that, so that's a lot of fun. But that, again, just that 2 rookies are going at it is just so crazy and so fun.
How did you look at the first two matchups? And I thought in Game 2 last night the Red Sox had chances. I mean, catch the ball in left field would have been nice by Durant. I don't know how they gave Aaron Judge a hit on that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, they had opportunities last night where I felt like they could have pulled out that win.
Yeah, both of the first two games were a lot of fun to watch. Garrett Crochet doing his thing in game one, that's what the playoffs is all about. And then yesterday, with the chance to finish it off, it was fascinating to watch the strategy by Alex Cora going for the kill. Right? Pulls Brian Bello in the third inning.
Yeah.
Has a fully rested bullpen that featured four left-handed relievers. So he was able to go to Justin Wilson in that stretch of four out of five lefties in the Yankees lineup, and then Steven Matz the next time, and it almost worked out. Like, they almost nailed it. And then they asked Garrett Whitlock for six outs, and he only gave them five. And the margin between a glorious victory and an agonizing loss is so, so thin. And if any number of those twists and turns last night had gone the other way, then the Red Sox would be moving on and the Yankee season would be over. And that includes Austin Wells' barely fair line drive, Jazz Chisholm's barely safe slide into home, Didon Rafaela popping up a bunt inexplicably. That was terrible. Jaron Duran not catching Aaron Judge's quote-unquote single. Rafaela's deep fly out to right for the final out, right? There were so many things that just barely went not the Red Sox way, and it ended up with a just barely loss, which is a loss nonetheless. And here they are. They have to win tonight or now their season is over. So, I'm not a huge fan of the expanded playoffs on principle, but man, these best of three series are electric.
No doubt. How does someone rule that a hit for Aaron Judge? Do you know?
Well, these days everything is a hit according to the official scorers, and that's what MLB wants them to do to kind of juice those offensive statistics. But two, I kind of see where the offensive where the official score is coming on this one. Since Duran dove, I guess since he dove, it's like, you know, some extra effort, not a normal play. That said, he didn't really need to dive to catch that ball. So, as Duran himself said, so it was, it's a weird one. A single error, run scores either way, and that's what matters most, you know?
Tim, a guy that I thought was really impressive, especially in the Red Sox win game one, and you mentioned his name with that deep fly ball to right, and Didon Rafaela. Down the stretch, it has been really, really good for the Boston Red Sox, and I thought he had one of the best at-bats of the entire series with that walk against Luke Weaver that changed the total tide of Game 1. Is this something that Yankees fans should be careful of here in Game 3? Cam Schlittler and company, be careful how they pitch to Rafaela, even though he's at the bottom of the lineup? Because to me, I've noticed him put together some really, really good at-bats here, Tim, in this series.
He has had some very good at-bats, and it's so interesting, too, because this is a guy who basically carried the Red Sox in June and July.
Yeah.
Looked like he was taking some massive leap forward and then was terrible for most of the second half, but still was able to come through clutch in a bunch of moments, including when they clinched a playoff spot Friday night. Triple off the wall, Fenway goes crazy, big, big moment. So that Rafa, usually you don't need to be careful with Rafaela because he'll swing at almost anything and often not make contact. That he drew an 11-pitch walk against Weaver, and I agree, one of the biggest at-bats of the game, maybe the biggest, was so interesting. And then he walked again yesterday. And it was only the sixth time in his career that he drew a walk in back-to-back games. So Rafaela is not exactly locked in right now, but he's got something rolling. He's seen the ball well. He's taken those balls. So it's, he's not right now the automatic out that he was for a lot of the second half of the season. So, you know, with all the power that he's got in that little body, you do need to be careful to some degree at any time because, you can crush one 450 feet, and that's not an exaggeration. Like, he's actually that strong, even though he doesn't look it. But, you know, he also does tend to be free swinging.
Yes, he does. We'll see how this plays out. I mean, short leash, right, for the young early kid, right? I mean, what does Cora do if he gets into early trouble?
if who gets into early trouble?
Early.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Early.
Both managers are going to have short leashes on their rookies because this is win or go home. So if a guy is faltering, you cannot afford to give him time to figure it out. It's kind of like Rodon yesterday in the Yankees. If, you know, Rodon was excellent at the beginning of the game, and if he had, say, given up that two-run single to Story and then another hit, and the Yankees had not gotten that home run from Rice, Rodon would have been out of the game. But because they had the cushion, because he had a smooth sailing first couple of innings, he earned himself some wiggle room, and it ended up working out. With these guys, either the team that loses is going home, so Early and Schlittler, if they get off to good starts, that's great for their managers. They can take it inning by inning and see how the game is evolving and see what's going on. What's going to be so interesting to see is neither bullpen is really the freshest right now. The Yankees leaned on their guys the last couple of nights. Bednar's pitched 2 days in a row. The Red Sox, of course, asked a bunch of relievers for a lot of outs last night. So I don't know what Garrett Whitlock, for example, is going to be able to give them tonight. But it's all on Early and Schlittler. If they post a couple scoreless innings, then they will earn themselves more.
Should be fun tonight. Electric atmosphere in the Bronx, no doubt. And Tim, always good hearing from you. Keep up the great work with the Boston Globe, and I'm sure we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Tim Healy covering the Boston Red Sox.